I don't know if you recall, but in 2018, about Measure 106 was a backdoor ban on abortion that sought to take abortion coverage and care away from folks who rely on the Oregon Health Plan. And voters overwhelmingly defeated that ballot measure and voted no, and really affirmed that here in Oregon, the majority of folks really support people's ability to access abortion care when they need to, regardless of how they're insured.
Are there any consequences to being complacent or apathetic about this issue? Having such a progressive state, progressive abortion laws in a state like Oregon, is that something we can expect to see, regardless of what happens to Roe, that abortion rights are cemented into state law?
I think that's a great question. So the thing that I like to say is that Oregon didn't get here overnight, right? It wasn't that we magically woke up and we were one of the most pro-sexual reproductive health care, expanding access to abortion, protecting it in our state law. We did not codify the right to abortion in our state until 2017. So I think that's always interesting. We were one of the first states to not make it illegal before the Roe decision, but we did not codify that right in state law until 2017 with the passage of the Reproductive Health Equity Act and with champions like Speaker Kotek and Governor Brown and, you know, all sorts of, and all are like champions in the Senate and the House. But we worked really hard to be able to elect those pro-sexual and reproductive health care champions. One of the biggest lessons I think we all need to learn is that state elections matter a lot. And with a court that comprised with the individuals that it has now, with those being lifetime appointments, with a number of those justices being very young, it's gonna matter more than ever that we're working hard and not being complacent to make sure that we're voting up and down the ballot for people who are going to protect our fundamental rights and freedoms and expand access to healthcare. Because in the last 4 or 5 years has taught us anything, it is not to take anything for granted and not to feel like you are just safe in your little like corner of the world, because no man is an island. And we should care about what's happening in Texas, and we should care about what's happening in Mississippi. And we should be thinking about how Oregon can be a leader and a beacon for folks who need to get care. It might need to travel to our
this
state.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are proud to present the 42nd Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15 through Sunday, July 17th at Cathedral Park in North Portland. Jazz, blues, soul, and Latin musicians will rock the park for 3 days. Tony Coleman, Eddie Martinez, Outer Orbit, and Greater Kind are just a few of the 15 bands performing this year. That's the 42nd Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, July 15 through Sunday, July 17th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Smooth mind, floating like a butterfly, notes set afloat, sung like a lullaby, brace yourself.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with Rachel Haynes. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today we have Lisa Haswicki, we have Nels Pasternak, and we have Greg Burl. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
Hello.
So we just wrapped up the annual National Education Association Representative Assembly last week in Chicago. And sometimes we just refer to it as the NEARA. So listeners, if you hear that term, we are talking about the Representative Assembly. All three of you were delegates, and so we really wanted to have some delegates on our show and are looking forward to you sharing about your experience and what some of the important issues were that came up. So let's start by having each of you just introduce yourself and what role you play as an educator and what local you're a member of. Maybe let's go in order of how about Lisa and then Nels and then Greg, and we'll just stick to that order.
Uh-oh, I have to go first. All right. I'm Lisa Haswicki, speaking to you as an individual today. She, they, or we. As many of us do have a lot of roles. My full-time role is a music educator of instrumental music. And last month I completed my 15th year in the classroom as a director of bands. Woo! In addition to my classroom role as director of bands, I've been in building equity coordinator for 5 years, leading site-based equity leadership team that supports Tiger Tualatin's pillars for equity. And as an equity leadership team, we facilitate professional development, support student voice, elevate student concerns, and build family and community partnerships. I've also been a part of our student pillar leadership team for 3 years. And a couple examples of that work is for the district equity leadership student pillar, we brought the Black History 101 Mobile Museum to TTSD for several years. And this year was the first time we were able to also bring all of our equity coordinators from across the district in to learn and experience from it. In addition, my site, Tualatin Middle School, we had all of our 1,000 students able to attend the museum over the course of a week. We also have connected sites across TTSD to build culturally relevant connections for our affinity groups, such as a field trip that included all of our secondary MEJA chapters. We all went to Portland Art Museum for the Frida Kahlo Diego Rivera Mexican Modernism exhibit this year. I'm also an advisor for the Asian Student Union. And as an Asian educator who both teaches in Oregon and grew up in Oregon, I didn't have racial or ethnic affinity space as a student. So I'm privileged to host this brave space for our Asian students to learn and grow together. And that group of students who initially brought this, they petitioned our principal at the time to start the group. So every year I tell the new students how this actually came about and how the students were the ones that created that change.
Great. All right, Lisa, you wear a lot of hats. Nels, what about you?
My name is Nels Pasternak. I'm a member of Eugene Education Association. Roles I play as an educator. I've been a life skills and peer tutoring teacher for 15 years, teaching simultaneous classes at the same time. I've been a lead teacher for ESY. I was staff liaison for the Student Look Me in the Eye Club and the Rotary Interact Clubs. And I was a member of Equity Youth Educators, so I was a staff liaison on that. Next year, I'll be an autism consultant serving all 8 middle schools in Eugene 4J. And I'm also chair of the OEA SPED committee, a member of the coordinating body for the Western Regional Education Network, an Oregon Educators for Climate Education member, an RA state delegate, and an Oregon Educators United member. And most importantly, as an educator, I play the role of a student. So I'm always a student, and I'm always trying my best to learn new things every day. And I think that that's actually the most important role that I play, is the role of a student.
Great, thanks, Nels.
All right, I'm Greg Burl, and I am a member of the Portland Association of Teachers, which happens to be Oregon's largest local. And my role is a little unusual because I'm a substitute teacher. There are very few teachers in the United States, very few substitute teachers represented by a union. And that means that I have better working conditions than most substitute teachers, and that I get health benefits, which is a lot of the reason I took a union job.
Great, thank you, Greg. And then just kind of quickly, we don't have time for sort of a longer story from each of you, but can you just tell us what inspired you to go into education?
First is my mother, Suzanne Haas-Wieke. She was a career educator in third grade, and I would volunteer in her classroom as a kid. And I love learning, and I love working with people in their learning, whether they're young people or older people. And then I also had some like positive and negative influences when I was growing up. And I think both the negative situations with educators as well as the positive were the catalyst for me to become an educator.
Right. Well, I'll try to keep it brief. You know, I was a life skills program peer tutor in high school, and my senior year, I actually got kicked out of being a peer tutor because I was playing catch with a soft football with a student during a break time, which is ironic because as a life skills teacher, we do that in my class all the time for break times now. And, you know, I had a rough time in school when I was a student. I got jumped in multiple fights. I got expelled. I even had a razor blade put in my shoe during a wrestle off. And so that was kind of my experiences, ironically, led me to want to be in schools and be someone who helps support people to feel included and to have better experiences than I did. I got my undergrad degree in psych. I took a job working at a nonprofit child development center, became an educational assistant for the ESD after that, and an at-large sub, worked in 15 different programs, and then went back and got my master's to be a life skills teacher after that experience.
Great, thanks, Nils.
And this is Greg. I just got into education because, well, I love kids. I think that our future is going to be determined by the quality of the education we provide students, and that's basically what I'm trying to do.
Well, thank you all. Can you tell our listeners about what the NEA Rep Assembly is, and also why you were a delegate?
I'm seeing that Lisa wanted to pass on that one. So, you know, it's the largest Democratic Congress in the world. It's a meeting space to create and share ideas. It's a huge learning opportunity and a place where we represent our locals and advocate for their interests at the national level. And it's a lot more than all of those things, but I feel like that would be a whole podcast just in itself, the magnitude of that question. So I'll see if Craig covers anything else that I missed there.
Sure. Well, the National Education Association Representative Assembly is the largest deliberative body in the United States. Our union is actually run by its members. And so we gather once a year to decide what business the organization will do in the following year. And of course, it's a giant organization. There's 3 million educator members, and so we a lot of things are ongoing. We have a constitution and bylaws and, that determine what sorts of things that we do, and then we get specific about what we're going to do each year when we meet.
Thank you.
Well, Oregon sent about 80 or so delegates to the Rep Assembly. We were excited to have the three of you because you all spoke at the mic on various issues, and they were either your own proposals or other proposals. Tell us about some of those experiences. What were the issues that you spoke on, and what was the end result, or how did the vote go on the things that you chose to speak about?
I was a brand new delegate, and so this year I co-wrote a new business item with the team, including Nels, including Steven, with also a lot of history behind that new business item, and it was regarding probationary period for educators. So we wanted to have NEA advocate for change for us, especially during this educator shortage crisis, and also just to support educators to stay in the profession, but also for us to be able to have choice in our own lives. Part of the probationary period for educators is that you have to get through 2 or 3 years or 4 years, depending on your state, in order to maintain like your job. And then you get to what's called contract status. And the problem is once you get through, if you move to another district, you start over at probationary year one again. So we're advocating to NEA to tell us what's already been done about this. If anything, recommendations for us to make the change so that you could keep your contract status if you move districts, and also explain barriers to it. And we did pass it. It was by kind of a small margin, and Nels actually killed the last speech at the end and really flipped a lot of people. We were able to pass it because he really leaned into the emotion and the trauma that some educators go through to stay in a profession.
Great, thanks, Lisa. Nels, what about you?
Thank you. Well, I spoke about several issues, and the first one was NEA advocating for members who have completed their probationary periods to retain their status when they switch jobs, as Lisa mentioned. I also advocated for some issues about environmental sustainability. I wanted NEA to do like a review of its own practices and see if it could come up with a list of suggestions for how it could become a more environmentally friendlier, you know, sustainable organization. And I also advocated for using the power of story to highlight strategies and supports that have helped our members to overcome high levels of childhood trauma. The vote, we passed, I think, 54 to 46 on the one about, you know, probationary periods advocacy to have that, follow educators as they go to different districts. And the first environmental sustainability MBI failed about a similar margin, like 46 to 54, so we were close. And then using the power of story to highlight strategies and supports that have helped our members to overcome high levels of trauma, that passed by about 10%, I would say. So that's how the votes went, and those were the main things that I spoke on. I wanted to speak on a few other issues, but didn't get called on, so.
Great, and to our listeners, just so you know, we use acronyms a lot, and NBI stands for a new business item, and it's really the primary sort of motion that is made or proposal that is brought to the body. We also talk about resolutions and policy and bylaws and legislative amendments, but new business items is the main way that we engage with decision making at the RA. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay, I actually want to take us in a little different direction because I didn't get to speak about this at the NEA. I got to speak about it at a pre-conference. And the most important things that I got a chance to speak about were, number one, the idea that we are in the throes of another national trauma about racism. Talking about racism makes a lot of people uncomfortable. And there's a strong movement often to just let's not talk about it. And so the thing is that we found out that people are willing to talk about race and they're willing to share in the experience if you let them know that what we want to do is get Black people and white people, help everybody, as opposed to making things better for minorities. The other most important thing that I spoke about was, well, the idea that the biggest threat to white people in the labor movement right now is anti-Black racism. It goes back to the 80s when President Reagan had an advisor, Lee Atwater, and they sat down to figure out how to use people's fear of African Americans to break unions, to lower people's welfare benefits, lower education benefits. And the idea was they weren't going to speak about race, but the policies they were putting in place were going to hurt Black people worse than white people. So we have come to the point where you see how bad things are in the country now. It was all a result of that policy decision 40 years ago, and I'm ready to reverse it now.
Great. Well, talk a little bit more, would you, about what stood out to you at the RA? Lisa, you've said that this was your first representative assembly, so maybe some different things stood out to you as a first-year delegate. And also, what do you think were the most important things that happened at the RA?
Well, oh my gosh, yes, as a new delegate, like everything stood out at first because I was just like in overstimulation the whole time. I was really impressed with the number of people that were there. As the first time delegate, I just there's only so much people can tell you about how big it is, but I've never been in a space that large with that many people that are trying to do work together. I mean, I've been to conventions, but that's not the same thing. We're all kind of independently working. So to see a body of people all trying to work together, and of course we have different issues and perspectives, but for everyone to be there trying to do the work together was huge. I forget what your second question was.
Oh, and just in terms of what happened, what do you think was the most important thing that happened?
Pass.
Go ahead, Nels.
You know, it's a big question. Obviously, a lot of important things happened. Everything we talked about in the previous question was important. You know, if we're speaking on it, then obviously we feel it's important. The NEA now has a national call to action to address gun violence in our schools and communities and increase safety. I know that was important. I feel like supporting our members who address issues related to Palestine was important.
Yes.
I think the MBI about clarifying why applied behavior analysis is controversial was very important. That's something that applies to our special educator work. Our work as special educators, it comes up all the time. I feel like addressing doxing is important and needs to be an issue in the next RA because there was a lot of people getting doxed. Yeah. I think that a lot of the issues regarding women's rights were important, including not only pro-choice, but also developing bereavement leave for educators who had a miscarriage. I think standing rule amendments 1 and 2 were important, and the way the voting on those issues went down was a challenging moment for many of us.
I also think just us being in person together was really important. It just, like, after we started talking, I was like, oh yeah, I haven't attended before, but it's been online. So physically having people in space together, working together through this pandemic, I think is super important.
Right, and I don't wanna give you the idea that there was no political controversy, but the thing that was most important to me is because we were all educators focused on our students' learning conditions, there weren't the typical right-left divides. Many of the business items that we can that we considered were voted in by large majorities, very different than what might happen if people thought this was a Republican or a Democrat thing.
Yes.
So sort of working off that, what did you find that was challenging or difficult at the RA this year? I see Lisa laughing.
Well, honestly, since it's my first one, I didn't get any sleep. I mean, I don't know how y'all do this every year, because like networking is so important and getting to know people is like how I work. I build relationship with people before I work with them. That's so important to me. But then how do you get rest?
So this is probably, I had the longest answer on this one. I thought the standing rule amendments at the very end of RA and how that whole situation went down was a challenge for me, allowing the chair to make of the committee to make arguments in favor when they're not supposed to, and then going to a speaker in favor right after, not recognizing speakers in the queue, saying that we would come back to a motion on the floor to refer all undiscussed new business, and then not being able to come back to that. So having all that fall to the floor, running out of time on an issue that a lot of people wanted to debate, having a hard time to stop at 8 p.m. when in previous years that wasn't the case and we would go till midnight. I personally am old school. I'd rather go till midnight and get all the work done. Agreed. And then also the challenging dogmatic thinking I heard, like either you think the NEA is a good organization or you don't. It can't be good sometimes and not at other times. Either you trust leadership or you don't. Literally, that was a reason I was given, is why we should pass some of the ideas. And I find that problematic, because I might trust you to give me a ride to work, but not to watch my kids, or I might trust a teacher to teach me one thing that's their area of expertise or not another, or in terms of government, I trust a political party sometimes on some issues, but disagree with them on others. So, you know, that was problematic. And then also the lack of emotional intelligence and empathy that some of the speakers showed at the mic caused real and palpable harm. So just some of those quotes. Sometimes as union members, we need to be able to help our admin weed out teachers we don't like rather than help and support. That was a quote I heard. These are not things I agree with. These are things I heard. Just to clarify, I heard someone say the Palestinians do not take responsibility for the death of their own children. That's traumatic. That's a horrible thing. That's the worst quote I've ever heard on the floor. I'm glad we can talk about this in a less hysterical way, a male educator saying that after a female educator gave a passionate speech. I understand yeah. miscarriage is traumatizing, another male educator after a female educator gave a speech. I understand miscarriage is traumatizing, but $2,000 is too much money to advocate for bereavement leave. So as much as we want to say it's all kumbaya and we're all in this together, and I do respect all the other educators on the floor, we need to be better in terms of emotional intelligence, and we need to be better in terms of the way that we treat each other and the things that we say sometimes.
100%.
I'll just say that Lisa and Nels covered every difficulty I had, and then some.
All right. So what did you enjoy about the RA this year? What were highlights of your overall experience beyond what happened on the floor?
Beyond what happened on the floor. Honestly, it's relationships. Like, that's how I am anyway. It's building those relationships with the Oregon delegates and then also delegates from other states and getting to know, you know, we're a team and people are working together and getting to know educators and other caucuses and seeing how the work happens. And also just, again, like being physically together in such a wonderful way after being through the last few years and not really getting to do things like this has like had a huge positive impact on me. Being in Chicago was awesome too. Just being in the city.
I learned a lot, you know, connected with ideas, engaged in dialogue with a lot of groups, NEA BATS, the Council for Educators of Exceptional Children, many delegates from multiple states and a lot of the delegates from our state. I learned about what the NEA wants to focus on and how they'd like to change some of the ways we operate. You know, I learned that it's going to be a consistent struggle throughout probably our entire lifetimes to power to the people versus the consolidation of power that happens in every arena of life, I believe. And it's a highlight to get to advocate for, you know, the majority rights and also, you know, minority rights. It's a highlight to be able to advocate for all the different affected, marginalized groups and also to highlight for like, to advocate for people power. You know, I don't know if I'm saying that exactly right, but
I think Nels is saying what he likes is being an activist.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to say it. I always feel like NEARA is the best week of PD for many reasons that you can get. And then passing the MBI is 4, 13, 30, getting close on 7 was a highlight. And then even after the environmental sustainability MBI failed on a very close margin, like I had an email from an NEA reporter who said, we still want to talk about environmental sustainability and the work that you and others are doing in this issue. So that was a real highlight for me to see, even when something fails. Sometimes, you know, they want to highlight it anyway, which I think is really important.
Oh, that's great.
Well, you know, just collaborating with people and trying to really push back against, you know, oligarchy.
I guess I would say that I most enjoyed being together in person again after 2 years of virtual representative assembly. And I gotta say, I'm the kind of nerd that enjoys doing the work. I enjoy the minutia of digging through constitution and bylaws and looking at the way things are expressed. And I also enjoy the fact that because I used to be a professional musician, I have friends in every city we go to. So I always take time to relax and hang out with friends separate from the RA.
So what did you all gain from this experience? I mean, it sounds like you shared a lot of that in your last answer, but what did you learn? And if anything, what do you plan to do with what you got out of the experience?
Well, I even learned how representative assembly works. So, and I still feel like I'm learning as a first time delegate, but I think I learned quickly, so I think I did okay. I plan to bring this back, the experience back to my local, because my local hasn't been super involved in RA for OEA either. And my group of delegates are 5 of us and 4 of us had never attended ever. And then the one person who had attended in the 80s. So we're planning to meet, talk to our reps when we get back and make a plan for what things we want to bring forward to next year and run again and hopefully get to attend next year.
Excellent.
All right. Well, you know, what we gain is perspective, knowledge, and hopefully some wisdom from all the experiences. Like I always like to quote, to acquire knowledge, we have to study, but to acquire wisdom, we have to observe. And if you like to observe humanity, then there's no better place, I would say, than the NEARA to observe all the intricacies and complexity of humanity. I can't plan to keep collaborating and advocating for the things I believe in, and also keeping an open mind and to realize that a belief can change with enough new information, and seek out partnerships, spread positive affirmation, and to work really hard to expand the inclusive and supportive network that we have growing in Oregon. I really feel strongly that there's something on the tide, like we're building something really special here in Oregon in our educator community, and I hope to continue to see that, you know, grow and become more inclusive and supportive, because everybody needs that, I believe.
So I'd have to say that the most important thing that I learned is something that if enough teachers and nurses follow through, we could have a blue wave election, because the fact is we have a political party in this country that is not interested in providing what students need to learn, what teachers need to teach, et cetera. And what we found out is that teachers and nurses are the most trusted people in the country. So if we could get enough teachers and nurses to be trained in what's called deep canvassing, where instead of just knocking on doors of people that are already likely to support your position, you knock on doors of people that haven't voted in the last three presidential elections and listen to their concerns and frustrations about what's going on in the country until they're ready to listen to your ideas for how that can change. And so there's a whole, in many elections, did not vote is the majority.